You're listening to Bison Report Radio.
It's going to be interesting to see how Richmond wants to play this in terms of what he does. He does want to go out and try to get some immediate help there.
The man, the myth, the legend, Greg Menard, rushing the passer from his right end position as a senior, and I think a legitimate National Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio from Scout.com. Here's your hosts, Ryan Burns and Ross Uglum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Bison Report Radio podcast. I am your host, publisher of the Bison Report, Ross Uglum, and with me to preview this UND-NDSU game on Saturday is Bison Report football analyst Trevor Gebhardt. Trev, how we doing?
Ross, we got a Packer game tonight. It was a good day today, and hopefully that momentum goes into the NFL opening kickoff. So we're well out here in the Carolinas, despite the hurricane coming. Didn't really touch us.
Yeah, absolutely. By the time you all are all listening to this, you'll have a pretty good grasp on Trev and I's Friday mood. You'll understand where we're coming from on a Friday, but let's dive right into the news because we've got a monumental matchup this weekend to break down for you guys. A little bit of news actually broken by myself, over at the Bison Report. I'm hearing from multiple sources that South Dakota State quarterback Jabari Gibbs has an injury to his throwing hand suffered during the fourth quarter of the game against Minnesota. Obviously, Gibbs finished that game, but he is expected to miss time. One source told me 4 to 5 weeks. Another person I spoke to said it might be a little bit less than that, but this is in no way, like the Carson Wentz injury of his senior year. I don't think the expectations are for significant missed time, but certainly if he does go through the next three games of the non-conference, which is a pretty easy slate for South Dakota State, some games they should win without him, he's still going to miss valuable repetitions with his number one offense and opportunities to get better as an offense heading into the Valley slate, which is obviously very, very, very important. As far as NDSU news goes, Trey Lance was named the newcomer of the week. That applies to transfers in their first year and freshmen, redshirt or otherwise. Made a joke on Twitter that there's a decent chance they're going to name that baby after Trey Lance following this year, but maybe there'll be some Bison fatigue with the voters. And then something really weird happened, which was that ESPN, after one game in a against a terrible non-conference opponent, decided that Trey Lance was worthy of a top 10 Heisman vote. And the guy who does the Heisman watch, received 1/10th place vote for Trey, which is kind of wild considering that Brock Jensen, Carson Wentz, and Easton Stick never even won the Walter Payton, much less the Heisman. Now, this is something that in no way should be taken seriously. I just want everybody to understand right now that Trey Lance is not an actual candidate for the Heisman Trophy. While he is eligible, and in fact, Steve McNair in the 90s had a third-place finish in the Heisman from the FCS ranks. Folks, this is not happening. I want y'all need to understand that. It's absolutely not happening, but a cool story, and I think something indicative of just how impressive Trey was in that first game. And finally, it seems like North Dakota State made it out of Minneapolis fine with injuries. The only two to pay attention to, really, are kicker Jake Reinholtz. North Dakota State in a pretty good position with Griffin Crosa if Reinholtz does have to miss time. And then the Jasir Cox injury is kind of a mystery right now. Not sure how serious to take that. Didn't hear much coming out of North Dakota State this week. Jasir walked off with Dr. Pyatt under his own power, so I have a hard time believing there are going to be significant snaps lost by Jasir due to whatever it is that happened with him. And I'm not a doctor, so I'm not gonna speculate. Let's hop right in to the University of North Dakota game, and I want to talk about something with you, Trevor. In that, I think, and I'm sure if I'm wrong, any UND fan listening to this podcast will let me know that I am. And just scholarship against scholarship. And no, James Johannesson, who we'll talk about later, does not count. Just because he had a scholarship offer coming out of high school does not mean that he had one when he decided to transfer back to the area from Minnesota. The only kid on the rosters that had a scholarship offer from North Dakota State and a scholarship offer from UND that chose to play at UND is defensive end Mason Bennett. Mason is from Winnipeg, Canada, obviously a lot closer to Grand Forks than he is to Fargo, but was really tremendous last year, 15 tackles for a loss, 9 sacks on the season, 2 shy of UND's single season record. And just was a force on the defensive line. I think pretty easily their defense's best player. What was some of the stuff that you talked to guys either that were recruited while you were there or recruiting classmates that what had you heard about UND's kind of recruiting style and what do you think it is besides just wins and losses? Because I think that's an obvious and effective one. What do you think it is that has North Dakota State so basically undefeated against UND in these turf recruiting wars?
Well, I can't really speak to my experience per se simply because I didn't have a ton of contact with North Dakota. I was offered by them. I left track practice and got a phone call from a 701 number, answered it, and had a scholarship on the table from the Sioux at that time. But just looking at it on the surface level right now, you have to say facilities. I know UND fans they might chirp at us for that, but it is what it is. I mean, the Fargo Dome is a better dome than the Allaire Center. I'll say it how it is. I haven't seen any of their weight room stuff or anything of that nature, but even the locker room, I've been in there. I don't know if it's been renovated as of late, but when we practiced at the Alaris in 2013, we did use their locker room. So I got to see that. And at that time, it was about on par with NDSU, but I would say if you had to compare them and put one above the other, NDSU's would take the cake. And then when you have the winning on top of that, I think kids quickly turn a cold shoulder towards the Fighting Hawks. I don't think it's a secret. And I think they know that. So how they recruited this Mason Bennett kid, I'm sure, was a little bit different. I don't know if they attacked him full force or if he came because he's closer to home. But whatever they did that they felt like was a win, I'm sure they'll probably try to mimic in the future. And for the Bison's sake, hopefully they can find out what that is to keep the recruiting stronghold in Fargo.
Yeah, because he would be something else across from Derek Tuska. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful to Logan McCormick or Tony Pierce, Barty Agu, whoever. Bennett and Tuska would be truly something, especially for offensive line to try to deal with. What is an offense when the opposing team's best player is a pass rusher? How do you kind of combat that? You know, what do you do to slow down a guy like that? And I'm trying to think of really good Valley pass rushers while you were there, but nobody's name is coming to mind right away, because I don't know if you played against Rivers and Moss from Youngstown State. I think that might be a little bit after your vintage. But how do you adjust to a playmaking defensive end, and how do you kind of neutralize him in an offensive game plan?
Well, back in my day, I was spoiled because a guy named Colton Underwood was pretty good.
The Bachelor.
Those who are Bachelor fans will love that one.
Yeah.
That guy was a horse. But like I said, I was spoiled because I had guys named Billy Turner and Joe Haig that were able to block him. So we would won from a simple matchup standpoint. But if you're in a mismatch situation, you got to get them tired. And you got to find ways to double. So one thing is to get them running side to side, whether it's either jet sweep or what a smoke screen or a bubble screen, whatever it is, you have got to get guys like that, especially ones that you know that have good motors, like a Kyle Emanuel, for example. Teams would try to get him running across the field. So if he was lined up on the boundary, they would maybe run something to the field to try to get him running across to get him tired and off the field. And that's the best way you can neutralize that big of mismatch is the fastest, is simply get those players off the field.
Yeah, and I think I'm not convinced that UND actually has a favorable matchup with Bennett. Maybe if they're going to line him up against Cordell, just from an experience standpoint. But Dylan Radins can handle a player the caliber of Mason Bennett. I'll tell you that right now. I mean, that's just the quality of player that Radins is. And you're exactly right. I mean, it's a similar situation with Underwood. Is he a good player? Yes. Are Joe Hagan and Billy Turner better? You darn right. You know, and that's I'm not sure Dylan and Cordell are Billy and Joe, but I don't know as though Dylan's talent level is all that different. I mean, he is something else. That's a kid that I know after going to NDSU or SDSU Minnesota, multiple Gopher media folks were lamenting missing on Radins and recruiting and having to watch him at North Dakota State. Quarterback situation kind of in flux, and I want to ask you a couple of questions about this. Number one, did you ever have to prepare kind of not knowing who the guy was? And this is more of an insider thing and something I think maybe our listeners will find more interesting. When do you know? When does the team know? Because I think, you know, it's always the media and the fans that are the last to find out, because, you know, that's the deal. When the media finds out, then the opposing team's going to know. So when are decisions like this usually made behind closed doors so that everybody can kind of get on the same page and prepare? Because there are different game plans for different quarterbacks. That's just obvious, whether it's you got one guy who can run and you put in a little bit more QB run, or you've got one guy that has – you know, 4 years in the system, knows every single play in the book. You got one guy that knows 25 calls. There's a huge difference there.
So when you're talking about finding the right personnel and when that occurs, I think the room basically knows as soon as you go out to the field and practice, and the first guy to take the snap is the current guy. That's kind of how you view it. I mean, the coaches tell you when you go into the meeting one, and things change day to day. It's kind of a "what you done for me lately" mentality. And it changes from day to day, week to week, month to month, season to season. And all that's communicated up front with the coaches that are leading that particular room. And you know, if there's a quarterback change, running back change, whatever it is, those there before, that's when Bell's finds out.
All right, sorry, we lost Trev there for a little bit, but we're going to keep it moving. We apologize for the audio issues there. James Johannesson's an interesting story. Obviously, we know that he was, I shouldn't say obviously, not everybody obsesses about this stuff as much as maybe we do at Bison Report, but James Johannesson was a high school, not just teammate, but a high school classmate of current Bison back Ty Brooks. Johannesson was more heavily recruited than Brooks and actually ended up at the University of Minnesota in the Big Ten. Really struggled to get playing time there, and then came back to the area and ended up with a scholarship offer from North Dakota. One never really came from North Dakota State. He, I think, has to be a little bit disappointed with his role at UND, considering that he was a, you know, Big Ten recruit, and now in a blowout win is only carrying the ball eight times. I just that it has to be difficult for him to watch the success that Brooks has had and to, you know, struggle to even make a major impact on what we currently understand to be kind of a mediocre FCS team. We don't know that UND is going to rise above mediocre. And when I say mediocre, I mean that literally, like 5-7, 6-6, 6-5, you know, that kind of mediocrity has kind of defined the Bubba Schweigert era of UND football.
Right. So, yeah, as far as Johannesson and Ty Brooks, I mean, Dom shared on his Twitter earlier this week about a story he did when they were seniors. I think I would have to imagine they're both happy for each other in terms of what they've done. And I'm sure they always want to support each other. I know Johannesson probably hasn't had the shakeout in college football that he's probably foresaw when he was 18, but we like to make stories out of something, you know, in the media. And it's hard to say as far as what the real situation is, if, you know, they kept things light for him because they didn't want to show too much on tape. Is it because he really warranted only 8 carries? I don't know. I think the jury's still out on that. But yeah, you definitely get a feel for, okay, you go to a Big Ten school, had some aspirations there, things didn't necessarily pan out how he wanted them to. Why he came back, I don't know. I have to imagine playing time is a part of it. But you don't know the real reasons until you're getting it from the horse's mouth. And then comes in and doesn't get the quality work that you would expect out of a kid like that, especially being a Big Ten running back. So I guess we'll see. I mean, if he's getting a heavy load early, then we'll kind of know. But if, you know, we get done with the game Saturday and he's got 8 to 10 carries again, well, then you kind of know where he's fitting into their system because they play Drake. It's hard to really pinpoint that as what his exact role is for the team. But I think having a game plan against North Dakota State, you're going to put the horses out there. So if he comes out of that with 20 carries, then you know where they see the Fargo South kid fits into the UND system this year.
We talked about, you know, game planning against a key pass rusher. I think especially if the quarterback situation is questionable, the running backs, you know, Brady Oliveira, John Santiago, those guys aren't walking through that door. Noah Wanzek really seems to be their number one threat. What adjustments were made defensively by Code Green to a Jake Wanicki, to a Dalrice Fountain, to these big-time wide receivers when you knew that it wasn't, you know, three receivers that are all kind of the same or two guys that were, you know, legitimate threats. When you had one guy that you needed to shut down, what adjustments were made during the week of practice by Code Green?
So similar to the conversation we had about the pass rush, we've been spoiled because when you got guys like Marcus Williams, CJ Smith, Trey, you got guys who are locked down, shut down corners, and you basically go playoff football on them. Everything's man-to-man coverage and let the best man win. And as far as Code Green goes, we were willing to bet on our guys 10 out of 10 times. So is that the situation they go on Saturday? I don't necessarily know. I haven't seen enough on Wanzek to formulate a solid opinion, but if you got nobody in your arsenal to be able to stop him one-on-one, you're going to have to go shell, or you might have to go four deep at times. And just keep the kid honest, give him some bump and run, and try to get him off his path, and don't let him get in the rhythm early. Because if you got a quarterback and a receiver getting in rhythm early, which would be tougher now that they had a change in quarterback, but it can be a scary thing. And we saw that with Winicky and Goddard over the couple years where South Dakota State walked out with the Dakota marker. So I think the biggest thing is be physical. Don't let him get in the rhythm. And if you got a guy that can shut him down one-on-one, believe in your guys and show them you have all the confidence in the world in them and the quality of work that they've already put in.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one other thing too is sometimes you get a young, inexperienced quarterback and that number one target, whether it be at a tight end or a receiver, gets even more emphasis because you get into kind of a security blanket type situation. And I'll be interested to see if North Dakota does not have Ketteringham available. If the backup comes in and it's, you know, constantly Wanzik time just because that's the guy that they trust. And you know, they are just trying to, if they're going to get beat, they're going to get beat going with their number one guy. Let's go towards kind of the North Dakota State part of the game plan. Bison are going to be a heavy favorite. I think the line sort of was always around that four touchdown mark, but now has started to creep towards four touchdowns and a field goal. We'll talk about that later, but this game is really going to be more about what NDSU does and doesn't do than it really has anything to do with you know, matching up with UND. And honestly, that's most North Dakota State football games, of course, is, you know, what they do, and if they play Bison football to the best of their ability, more often than not, they're going to come out on the correct side of the scoreboard, regardless of who the matchup is with. So, is this another team in UND? I think a 3-4, which sometimes has given NDSU a little bit of trouble offensively, those odd fronts. Just normal Bison football, establish the run and take your shots when you can?
Yeah, especially in a game where I know there's been all this talk about rivalry or no rivalry, whatever it is. In a game where you have situations that can be neutralized quick, such as a rivalry, you have got to throw the first punch and land it. And in North Dakota State, everybody knows it's going to be power. It's not a secret. And they're going to run it until the cows come home. And so I think that will be established early and often. And, you know, if that doesn't go well, which is very rare, they'll adjust. And I think they have the weapons to be able to make those changes if necessary. But I think you're going to see heavy dosage of power early until you see someone break free for 20 or taking one 50 or 60 yards to the crib.
What does Trey Lance do for an encore? Does Randy and Tyler Roll try to get him going a little bit, you know, after the Heisman buzz or really after his almost perfect day in Minneapolis? Regardless, what do you think he does in this second game, that whatever you think of UND and whatever you think of the line, this team's a more legitimate threat than Butler?
Oh, yeah. I mean, is the likelihood of North Dakota winning this game there? Not really, but is it out of the picture? No. I mean, it's if these young cats do not show up to play, and UND lands a few punches early and gets a couple scores, you never know what can happen when you build confidence in a team that is looking to play Goliath. So, but to go back to your original question, I would love to see more of the same from Lance. I don't know how else to put it, because he played near perfect, like you said. And I'm going to contradict what I was saying earlier about running power early and often. I think within that first 10 plays, I think you do need to take a shot and let that kid just be cut the cord. Give him a shot downfield with could be anybody. It could be Christian, or it could be Phoenix. I don't really know, but do heavy doses of power, maybe get a quick screen in there and somewhere play action post. Because if you get Lance dialed in early and you give him some confidence, you saw at Minneapolis what he can do. So hopefully they give him opportunities to run as well. I know Ence doesn't want to see him run anybody over anymore, but I think you got to involve him in a numerous amount of ways in the first half. So a lot of power and a lot of Trey Lance.
Yeah, that especially with the throwing shoulder. I think that one's taken out. That one's not going to be available anymore for Trey. What's the next step to take for these young receivers? You saw Jacob Lippi play. I don't remember seeing DJ Baptist or Braylon Henderson in the game. I could go back and look. It seems like there's potential right now for a four-game rule rotation with those young receivers, but you still saw, you know, major strides from Phoenix Sproles, major strides from Christian Watson. You need to see what you have in Jimmy Kapouras and Cole Jacob. Didn't see any targets, I don't think, but saw the field quite a bit. Andy Voyan caught a ball. What's the next step for these young receivers?
Well, what I want to see is a downfield spring block. I want to see one of those cats get downfield about 30 to 40 yards when someone's navigating through traffic, like John and I used to do back in the day, and you are fighting and clawing to get to a body every step of the way. I think once you have that on tape, it's very scary because you look at a group of receivers that are very athletic, they're very fast, and when you get three to four guys that are willing to lay their body on the line for a third level run, that scares defensive coordinators because you know you have 11 guys willing to help out one guy. I couldn't tell you how many times I'd watch offenses while I was supposed to be watching defensive tape, and I would laugh at the receivers at how lazy they would be off the ball. And it was the biggest telltale sign of if it was a run or a pass because they just didn't have the same fire. So if you got three or four guys doing that every play, you've got a whole shell of defenders on their heels every single play because they don't know what's going to happen. If it's a pass, they got to be on their heels backpedaling. And if it's a run for power, you're not going to be in the play 9 times out of 10 unless it breaks off to the third level. But they know that you're going to come at their face no matter what. So I want to see more of that. And I think if these guys start that at a young age, you are going to see a very, very efficient pass offense this year, next year, and the following years. Cause seems like none of them are going to graduate until 2024.
Yeah, they're young. I mean, there's no question about it. You and I were kind of not joking's not the right word, but we were talking a little bit about the Oregon game in 2020 and just how many of these kids are still going to be around for that game and just how much Oregon loses. But that is a discussion for a podcast very, very long down the line. 47 points for this offense or 40-something like that against Drake in a home game. Is this a true test, this new spread offense for UND? Is this a true test of Code Green?
Short answer, no. Long answer, sort of.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely more of a test than Butler. That's not a secret. I don't think anybody's shocked by that. I don't think I'm giving you any hard-hitting analysis by being publicly spoken about that. But it will challenge them to a different level, especially guys who played for the first time on Saturday, because you're going to see something that they're not used to. They're used to seeing power football all fall camp, and then you have Butler who's not slinging it all over the place. So it'll give them a challenge that I think will be necessary, especially as a reference point for, you know, South Dakota State or in the playoff, because you don't know who you're going to face. You could be facing Eastern Washington, Sam Houston State. UC Davis has a heck of a quarterback. So I think it's going to be a quality film session tape on Saturday for these guys down the road. But as far as a true test on where they're at on a national scale, I don't think this is going to be it, to be honest with you.
So here's my opinion after watching both games, the Drake UND and North Dakota State. The key matchup, I think, and where I see the blowout coming is in this new offense. And UND has switched from a running-based scheme, not exactly like North Dakota State's, but kind of in the same arena with Brady Olivera and and John Santiago and guys that, you know, that can play, to now going to the spread, and which is interesting, obviously, because you run pro style run in the big sky, and then you come to the valley and want to install the spread. It seems like those two things are, you know, dead opposite, but at the same time, sometime zigging while everybody else is zagging is a way to win maybe more games than you should. You see that with like triple option teams in the ACC, like Georgia Tech or other power run teams. It's certainly what Kansas State's going to try to accomplish in the Big 12 under Coach Klieman. So maybe the spread in the Valley is something that UND will be successful with. But right now, with the horses that they have, that's where I see major issues, because the defenders that are going to be down in that area against the spread are going to be Destin Talbert, Josh Hayes, Marquise Bridges, and Jabril Cox, with whoever they end up playing as that inside nickel linebacker. That's a terrifying matchup for any offense. It's a problematic matchup for an offense that has as few true weapons as UND has. Just how difficult is it to try and score when the opposing team is that talented? And you probably never faced a defensive backfield quite as talented as NDSU when all three of these guys plus Jabril are healthy. But just how difficult is it to try and run the spread when your receivers don't have favorable athletic matchups?
Almost impossible, because you're basically taking away the one true advantage that they have and what they're trying to attack. So as far as this matchup goes on Saturday, you've got a group of guys that are more athletic and faster than the people that you're relying on to get you points. That does not work out well, to be quite frank. So I'll be curious to see what UND tries to do once they notice that, because they're going to have to make adjustments. Is it going to Johannesson more? I don't know. That's pure speculation, but if you're under spread offense that's predicated on speed and getting the defense tired, but the matchup is you're not as fast or athletic, you'll be in for a world of hurt unless you're making plays early and can get in a rhythm to get those guys off kilter. And with it being in the Fargo Dome, you're not exactly being helped out in that stance either.
Yeah, and see, that, like I said, Trev, that's why I really have concerns for UND, because last time these two teams played, it was immediately after you graduated, correct?
Yeah, so my last season was 14, they played in 15.
So if you look at the yardage discrepancies, and if you watch the film, the end score ends up being 34-9, but the quality of football teams, the gap was wider. What happened there was, I think, a fumbled punt or a muffed punt that flipped one possession, and then both teams were content to kind of run the clock, and in the sense that NDSU ran their normal stuff, 8-minute drives, you know, take your soul away from you type stuff, but UND was also welcome, also running the ball, running clock, trying to control the game. So it didn't get to be 55-7. That's not how that worked. If UND runs the spread and has three and outs that take 37 seconds off the clock, it could get ugly. It could get actually ugly.
Yeah, it's definitely a matchup issue. For UND, I think the biggest thing for them coming into this game, they got to find some small wins that they can build on, maybe a drive or two. But I think as far as from a program standpoint, this is really kind of a temperature gauge, in my opinion, and you'll see it in my game preview. It's a litmus test for UND. It really is, because I don't foresee this being a deal where they're keeping it really competitive. I've been proven wrong before, but the matchup is just not favorable to the Fighting Hawks. It's just not.
So let's get her done here, Trev. Let's give our game predictions. I'll go ahead and go first. Like I said, I see this one going the way of the Bison, and I think it's just a terrible matchup for North Dakota, especially with potentially a backup quarterback in the game. The second live reps of this new spread offense, and to go against the quality of athletes that North Dakota State has at corner and at Jabril Cox in that detached linebacker spot, they don't have the speed to run what they're going to try to run against North Dakota State. It's a simple athlete versus athlete problem. I've got 41-10 Bison, and I don't see UND posing a real threat this year.
So you basically took away the whole suspense thing for this, because I have 42-10.
Oh, man.
How about that? I don't know what yours was last week, but I was pretty dang close. I think I had like 56-6 or something.
Yeah, I think I can't remember what I said. I think 52-7 was me. So I wasn't that close. I was close on the margin of victory, certainly, because they scored 5 more points than I said and gave up 3 more points than I said. So my margin of victory was close. But yeah, you're right. That one we just about nailed, both of us.
Yeah, 41-10 and 42-10. So not really much of a difference there.
All righty, Trev, I appreciate the time, brother. Guys, we really appreciate you listening to the show. People ask me, what's the number one way you can support us? That's real easy, and that's to become a VIP member at Bison Report. Depending on which way you do it, it could be less than $5 a month. Right now, it's 30% off of an annual pass. Guys, we're talking about less than $10 a month. A lot of local media going behind the paywall. A lot of media, period. Just the print model is kind of not sustainable anymore. And more often, you're paying for content. But with Bison Report, you're paying for quality content. Trevor and I are going to be together all football season long. Nate's going to be there during basketball season. We've got a strong team behind the three of us. Guys, that's the number one way to make sure that this baby keeps going, is to become a VIP member at Bison Report. Thank y'all for listening one last time, and go Bison.